Welcome, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the All In Podcast. We're at episode 5 now. Thanks to everybody who's been tuning in so far. I'm your co-host, Eli, and I'm joined with my co-host, Mike Badzik. How you doing today, Mike?
Hey, doing good, man. Ready, episode number 5. Let's get into some soccer for the first time. I'm really excited about this one.
I am as well, and we have a special guest coming to you live from New York today. My guy, Sean Turner. How's it going, Sean?
I'm good, man. Thank y'all for having me back.
Appreciate you coming back. And we are here to talk about the real football, international football, club football, as the Bundesliga returned yesterday and today as well, getting back in action. The first live sports or major live sports that we've seen other than UFC in quite a while. And it got off to a big start with Borussia Dortmund taking down one of their in-league rivals, FC Schalke, and with a 4-0 win. Haaland got on the board again. He's been on fire. Guys, can BVB challenge for the title this year? Mike, what's your thought?
Well, BVB challenging for the title, probably, I mean, they're going to challenge, right? They're 4 points back right now, so, and they play Bayern on the 28th match day. So, yeah, I think that there's definitely going to be a challenge there. I don't think that they're going to do it. I don't think they just don't have the back line to compete with Bayern and really make a run. So, before I even talk about them, let's just, you know, kind of do like an overview here of Bundesliga. So, I think, first of all, like, Germany and their government's handling of the coronavirus should be applauded. You know, like, when you look at other countries and why they haven't come back yet and why Germany has, well, they're, you know, Germany, look at Germany in a vacuum, they're, you know, I don't want to get too technical with the coronavirus stuff, but their reproduction and their R rate is at 0.75. So really the magic number there is one. So that's for every one person who has their coronavirus, they infect that many people. Theirs is at 0.75. So the goal number is one. And then, you know, obviously once you get below one, you're slowing the spread. So they should be commended for how they've handled it. I think other governments in Europe and, you know, we don't even need to talk about the United States' government's handling or mishandling, I should say. So other countries should be looking to them. I think they should be applauded for their efforts. It was a huge success, like you said. FS1 released some of their ratings numbers. So if you compare their first Bundesliga game that happened yesterday with Dortmund compared to the last Bundesliga game that they aired on FS1, plus 725% in ratings. Huge success, right? So I think other leagues, including the US leagues, should be able to look at that and give them some encouragement to try. I mean, I'm sure they're trying as hard as you can, but really, you know, work with solutions that even maybe didn't make sense from a number standpoint. I think that you should factor in that you might get these huge rating boosts, like baseball in particular. The owners were concerned about all the revenue they're going to lose from not having fans at the stadiums. But I think that when you look at these ratings for the Bundesliga, you might be encouraged to think that, well, maybe the TV money is going to be so much higher that it's worth it, and then some. So I think that they should be encouraged to really, really work to get something figured out. But I just wanted to mention that stuff before I talked about, you know, what actually happened on the pitch. BVB looked right. Awesome. I think that...
Well, real quick, Mike, yeah. I would say to chime in on how well Bundesliga has handled that and Germany has handled that. You could tell with the numbers that you gave us, you could tell that they equipped themselves pretty well mm-hmm. to handle that. And it's no surprise to me that Bundesliga was one of the first leagues to actually get back.
Yeah.
So, agreed. I would say I'd like to throw a shout out to them. They handled that really well.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and two, even like you saw the guys on the bench who they were sitting 6 feet apart. They're all wearing masks. And at first I saw that and I was like, why are they doing that? Because haven't all these guys been tested? Like, if there was any risk of those guys, why are they even in the stadium? But I think it was more like they were being symbolic, like in a way they knew that all eyes were going to be on them. And so they wanted to show, like, this is how we should go about this. This is how Germany's gone about this, you know, the separation and the mask. So, yeah, like, I agree with Sean.
That's really funny. That's really funny, because that was actually one of the first questions that I had, because obviously Eli brought it up. Holland got on the board again. Yep. The dude is on fire. He got on the board again first, and you can see his teammates, they wanted to run over to him and celebrate with him, but obviously they did.
Yeah, no celebrating is a rule.
Yeah, they did a distance thing. So I was thinking, like, haven't these players already been tested and things like that? So I was just like, okay, well, I understand that they're taking, like, an additional step, which is nice to see, obviously, because you got these guys in practice with each other. I'm not sure how they got it working out in the locker room, but I'm sure they're taking some type of precaution in there as well. So that was definitely something that I was thinking about, too. Yeah, so
it was cool to see. I mean, and BVB, like, so I guess just looking forward then kind of to answer Eli's question of, you know, how BVB is going to fare in the rest of the season. It'll be interesting to see how they handle their attackers, because they've got so many, you know, Haaland, Brand, Guerrero, and Hazard, who, you know, wasn't going to start, and then he did and played amazing. Yeah, Sancho, who's coming off injury, he came off the bench. You just wonder how all the pieces are going to fit. And like I said, too, like, I don't think they have enough on the back line to hold Bayern down. You know, the way they came out this year, all the goals they're scoring. I personally can't see it, but, you know, I'll let Eli handle, you know, maybe give his thoughts, I guess, on BVB possibly actually challenging for a title.
Yeah, I mean, they're 4 points back, and they've got about 12 games left, I believe, or 9 games left, I'm sorry, in the season. It's going to be tough, and they have a tough schedule coming up as well in those 9 games. They've got Wolfsburg, Bayern, like you said, on the 26th, and then in June they have Leipzig again. So they're going to have 3 teams that are top 6 on the table at this point in time that they'll run into in their last 9 games, including Bayern. So they're certainly going to have to take care of business going down the stretch, and obviously they're going to have to win the game against Bayern in order to have a chance. I'm not quite sure that they can do it. I think they'll keep it close to where, you know, Bayern may not actually clinch the title to the last few games. But like you said, there's too many defensive issues there. Even though Bayern has their own, I think Dortmund's are even worse. And I just don't see how they make up that 4-point gap with, you know, this amount of games left.
No, what I was going to say, I was kind of going to touch on the same thing as the schedule that they have panned out over those last few games that we have coming up. And you just kind of got to compare Bayern's schedule to BVB's schedule. And with Bayern on their schedule, I think it's really tough for them to take care of business. Let me double check here. BVB actually, I believe they host Bayern too, so that's something that they're going to have to take a look
at.
They
got a chance.
Protecting that ground. So I think that gives them a little bit of an edge. So they just got to handle business against some of those other teams that they got on their schedule. Like you said, they got Wolfsburg. They should handle that. They have FSV Mainz. They should take care of that. They got Leipzig on there. So some good teams on that schedule, but something certainly that can be done. And honestly, we got to talk about Haaland. There's no way he's in the news all the time. Mm-hmm. He's fantastic. I was watching him and Julian Brandt hook up. Fantastic, Julian Brandt. Honestly, myself, I thought was the man of the match. You could just see his movement off the ball. His passes were precise. Flicks. We saw the flick that he had that helped towards the goal. So, yeah. I mean, Julian Brandt playing really well. Got some really good guys around him. Guerrero, clinical in front of the goal with the outside foot.
Yeah.
Oh, it was. I thought he was going to take that shot a little bit earlier, and he still made it look good. So when I was tuned in, it was. I would say they're starting to get really entertaining, really entertaining. And you can see how good Haaland's positioning is, and why he accumulates so many goals and across all the leagues he's been in or all the competitions he's been in. I'll say.
Yeah, and it's no surprise to me that they were able to go out there. I mean, you know, Schalke, obviously, we're hoping for more from them in a derby game, but you know, it's tough when there's no fans and it's a derby game. It just didn't feel the same. So probably they didn't have that same energy. Obviously they were just getting torn apart back there. But I think that kind of makes sense, right? With the limited training they've had, I think the teams with the higher talent levels, you know, like Dortmund and Leipzig, and of course Bayern, are going to be able to probably impose their will a lot of the time, especially with like ball control. Because, you know, before this got kicked back up, one of the big conversation is, well, how much training are these guys going to need? How much training can we give them before we throw them back into the games? And I don't think it was as much as what a lot of people thought it was going to be. And that's probably, you know, that plays a role whenever, you know, you have limited training, you haven't worked together in a while, work as in, you know, play football together in a while. I think it was kind of expected that, now not expected like BVB came out and did, but we saw Bayern handle business. So that'll be the thing going forward is, you know, as these teams are back together, how do they improve? And the teams in the lower part of the table too, how do they improve and work tactically? Because that's how those guys are going to win, right? It's all tactics. When you don't have the talent, you got to win with tactics. And when you have limited training, it's hard to work on that. I guess we could take it to Bayern though. They won 2-0 today. Louis got on the board. Pavard got the other one. So
yes, he did.
You know, they didn't look great. They didn't, you know, they weren't jaw dropping or anything like that. What were your overall thoughts of them today, Eli?
Bayern looked, you know, like typical Bayern. They weren't, you know, at their absolute best. I would say, obviously, they've had some time off. But in typical fashion, Lewandowski gets on the board and, you know, still one of the top strikers in the world, in my opinion, as he gets on the board. And then they got a good late goal from Pavard to seal the win. Dominated possession, took care of the ball and got a decent amount of shots in total, 13 shots, only 3 on goal throughout the game. But it was a solid win for them, especially in their first game back after having such a layoff. You know, for them to be able to take care of business on the road in a game like, of this circumstance, I think it's a good win for them and it's got them on the right track. I think Bayern is very fortunate really as well when it comes to kind of how this situation worked out for them. They were on pace to lose Lewandowski and have him miss, you know, quite a bit of games.
Right.
And really because of the layoff and not only the Champions League, but also in their league play, the amount of games that he's going to end up missing is actually minimized by, you know, the league being suspended for that time period. So they've kind of, not to say benefited, because obviously no one's benefiting from this pandemic right now, but from a football perspective, you know, they get their top striker to miss, you know, the least amount of games as possible because of this. I think that really worked out in their favor in that regard.
Yeah, I would say I'll go ahead and hop in right there with Bayern. I mean, like you guys said, it wasn't a stellar performance, but they still handled business. So,
and
like
Eli said, not many shots. It's a decent side, too. It's not like they weren't playing right. One of the worst teams in the league.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Not too far down. Well, where we got them sitting at? 12. Yeah, around 12. So not too bad. Like Eli said, not too many shots on goal. Only 3 total. They dominated possession. That's kind of how Bayern play. Neuer back. I would say. I know he's been back for a little bit, but looks like he's returning to form. And hey, I would say Bayern. They went in there, took care of business. Although Pavard is one of the young guys that they brought in. I'm really a big fan of him. He's also a Frenchman. So, I mean, he could possibly get a lot of playing time here in the future on the international team. And, I mean, we can see how good France is. They have plenty of young guys. They have plenty of older vets that play for that France team that are really good. But to kind of stay on Bayern, yeah, it wasn't a fantastic game. They still took care of business defensively. So that's something to applaud them for. Kept it a clean sheet, so that's good. But other than that, I mean, hey, they won that game and 4 points clear. I could very well see them taking the title again which is why it's pretty crucial for BVB to step up on that game where they do host Bayern. But so far, to me, I think Bayern is the ones that's taken away. They have the most goals for, one of the least goals against, only giving up 26 goals, and they're up four. So, I mean, I could very well see them taking it again. But it's nice to see Lovie back, converting a penalty. And I already say that silver lining in the coronavirus happening is that he went down shortly before this really kind of expanded. So you cut down the amount of time that he's going to miss games. And for me, I thought it was really going to be a big part that would have to come out of their midfield and Serge Gnabry. And now you kind of relieve that a little bit because he's not missing so many games. But I already said that was something that concerned me that Mike brought up. How much time are these guys getting before they came back? Like, who's coordinating the training? How much training are these guys getting in was a big question that I had. And it all seems kind of independent between each club. So I can only imagine how much more independent it is for each player on each club. So they didn't look great. It was good though. So that's pretty much my takeaways away from it and how good Pavard played.
Sean brings up a good point with the defense, because that's really where you're looking for them to make their mark. Because on offense, you know what you're going to get, right? They've proven that they're going to score goals every game. But the defense was the question. That's what they're going to need against teams like BVB and Leipzig, teams that are going to put up goals and are really skilled going forward. So the fact that they were there, the defense looks like it hasn't taken a huge hit with the time off, and actually, you know, looked really solid. I think that's really big for them.
In that top four in that table, what separates them is that big scoring presence. Because you can see right after the fourth spot, which you have Leipzig at 63, and that's where I think that comes into play. I think they could use another scoring option. But they're really good at keeping people off the board. So that's probably something that is attributed to the defense that is played in that league from the better teams, and Bayern being one of the best, if not the best team in that league. It's just, I think that's pretty much the personality that they bring to the game, or their,
agreed,
whatever you want to call it.
So, and one of the things about the Bundesliga coming back, one of the adjustments that they've made, given the time off, is the five subs. How are you guys feeling about the five substitutes?
Yeah, I think it makes sense, right? With a big time off, you know, you don't want to be overexerting guys who haven't had the training in the past couple of weeks. So I think it makes sense. Maybe it's a temporary thing. I don't know if it makes sense for the rest of the season, per se. It is kind of, it can be a little bit, you know, boring when there's five subs and they're stopping play for that many subs. Kind of messes with the flow of the game a little bit. I think it makes sense, though, for right now anyway. I know Sean was complaining about it.
Yeah, I was wondering, five subs and five out of 11 people that are on the pitch,
right?
There's a lot of adjustment that you can make with five subs. So you could make a lot of different game plans with allowing that many people to come into the game. So I don't think it'll be something that's long term. I think it's something that's going to be really temporary. And once the numbers get a lot lower, it may be something that they draw back on, even if they go five now, four later, three then. You know what I mean? So, because you can face one team and then you can completely have it switch. And say someone makes three of those adjustments at halftime, you're almost playing a different team at that point. So I would say I want to know how they'll carry that out, or how they'll dial that back once you do give them that leeway.
Now, they can only make two subs at a time, so they did put a little bit of a restriction on it in that regards. So only two players can be done at a time, so they can't have a full like three-man swap out or five-man swap out in that way. But I agree, because like you said, your tactics can be drastically changed with those two additional subs. And when you really think about it, yeah, it's 11 people on the pitch, but one of those is a goalie who pretty much never gets subbed off. So you're right, you're changing pretty much half of the 10 guys that are out there on the field, depending on, you know, what you kind of need. And I get it, there's, you know, fitness issues, and right now they absolutely have to do it. But long term, I agree with you, Sean. I don't think it's something that would be here to stay in football, and mostly because it kind of takes out the manager's like pressure to set that initial starting lineup, because that's huge as far as like the tactics that he sets pre-game, because you only get those three substitutes to adjust throughout the game. So it kind of takes the pressure off of that for managers, and I like that. I think it's important that managers get it right at the start of the game when it comes to football, rather than, plus you have less stoppages with three subs than you do five, and it just keeps the game more fluent that way, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. So one of the biggest things for me with the Bundesliga, and like, I don't know if the Bundesliga is like the best league in the world. It's probably not. It's probably one of the, certainly one of the three or four best in the world. But as far as like it being the league on center stage right now, I think that's awesome, especially in America, because, you know, Bundesliga has kind of become this stopping ground for a lot of these young American players. We know Christian Pulisic was there with BVB before he went to Chelsea, but even now, like, over half the teams have American guys. Gio Reyna was going to start for Dortmund on Saturday. He had a pregame injury, and then Hazard stepped in for him and played really well. You got Tyler Adams for Leipzig. Weston McKennie plays for Schalke. He had a really bad game, but he was still starting and he was out there. So I think that's good that you got Americans out there, you know, because right now this is the best soccer being played in the world right now. And we have Americans out there. I think that matters. To some degree, that matters. Josh Sargent is the other one that I really want to watch too. He plays for Werder Bremen. So I try to do that German name. He's a striker, but they're in the relegation zone right now. But like, you know, when you're in the relegation zone, those are really big games. And he's a starter for that team. You know, the pressure's going to be on him. I kind of don't like the way they play him. They kind of have him like up top in a goal scoring role, where I think really he's a striker who's better at holding it up and maybe creating for others. But, you know, we're going to see. He's going to have to do what he's asked. And it'll be a big, big step for him to see if he can maintain playing at that kind of level on an international level. I'm super excited for the Americans. That's definitely the first thing I'll be watching for.
Pulisic came from BVB. Now he's got a fighting chance at Chelsea, which is a pretty big club, I'd say. Yeah, I would say Bundesliga being on display, it gave him a really good chance for people to see how good a few of these teams are in that league. And I thought it was really important, because me, myself, I kind of spread myself out to watching kind of some Serie A, mostly the Prem. And then if I can catch some La Liga games, I'll do that. Of course, when Messi is playing and if Real are playing. But I usually primarily watch those three. So for me, watching Bayern, watching BVB, they're on at a normal time. And with everybody being at home, they can catch them more frequently now. So, yeah, I would say I'm a big fan of the Bundesliga. And earlier, it was a lot closer. Bayern starting to pull away like usual. But earlier in the season, it was really exciting to watch. So I thought it was fantastic, one, for them to be the first and only league to be back, because I just knew that their viewership was going to be much higher. So I would say I enjoy watching the Bundesliga a lot, so it was a blast watching it.
Yeah, and Gio Reyna is interesting too. Like, he's come on now with BVB, I think like 8 times, and he's played pretty well. He's done a good job, but he's actually talked a lot about Haaland's influence on him as a leader on him, which is, you know, stunning to say. Haaland is 19 years old, and he's leading Gio Reyna, so. Yeah, I'm definitely excited to see where his career goes from here. Hopefully he does get a chance to start some of these games sooner rather than later.
Yeah, agreed, Mike. It was definitely sad to see Gio Reyna go out right before the game. I was really excited to see him get a start on a national stage, because it would have been my first opportunity to watch a full game from him, assuming he may have played the whole 90 minutes. So, I agree with you, though, as far as the men's national team players, they're getting a great opportunity, you know, with these guys that are playing in the Bundesliga to get a chance to showcase their skills and, you know, maybe build some hype around some of the young and upcoming stars that the U.S. men's national team has. So the next thing we want to get into and talk about is some other leagues who haven't started up yet. And there are some concerns amongst these other leagues' players as far as restarting their leagues during the pandemic. For example, Gio Simeone from Serie A had mentioned that he wanted there to be quote unquote zero risk before they returned back to play. And then there was Danny Rose, who was more blunt about you know, the situation where in response to someone saying the Premier League coming back would boost morale, Danny Rose stated that he didn't give an F about the nation's morale and stated that people's lives are at risk. So clearly he, you know, wants to make sure that there's no health concerns going forward before the Premier League thinks about coming back. So what do you guys think about these statements coming from these players and how these other leagues should handle restarting before they get back to play?
Yeah, so for the Danny Rose comments, I don't put a ton of stock into. I respect Danny Rose's opinion. I think it's a legitimate opinion to not want to come back, but it also makes sense. You know, he's playing for Newcastle right now on loan from Spurs. They're 13th in the table. He's not really showcasing anything at Newcastle, so there's not a ton of incentive for him to come back. Same thing with other guys who have spoken out, Raheem Sterling and Sergio Aguero for Man City. They don't really have much to play for. You know, they're kind of locked into that second spot, and looks like it's going to be no Champions League for them in the next 2 years anyway, so it doesn't make sense for them to want to come back either. I think teams that might want to come back, probably if you ask like the Bournemouth players, you know, they're in the relegation zone right now, third from the bottom. They probably want to get back as soon as possible. And same with like Aston Villa, who is second from the bottom and they've got a game in hand. I think if you ask those players, they would probably be much more eager to get back, you know, compared to Danny Rose and Raheem Sterling, where there's not a lot there. But the Premier League really has kind of fumbled the bag on this one. They were having a lot of trouble with communication. They brought in Rick Perry, former Liverpool boss, who was going to, you know, supposedly was going to come and figure out the plan. You know, it hasn't really been a plan yet. I know there was reports today that they were going to be reporting for training. What was that, next month in June? It looks like they set a date that they were looking to report back for training. They're hoping to restart matches in mid-June. They're going to be getting together in small groups here in the next couple of days, it looks like. So, you know, if they can get that figured out, then maybe it's a good turnaround. But up until this point, they've really made a mess of things. And, you know, I think it's tough, too. In England, the police is a much bigger entity than in other countries. They're kind of their own thing, and they have their own set of rules. So not only do you need government approval and league approval, you also need police approval. There's obviously not going to be any fans in the stadium like we saw with Bundesliga, but it's the crowds in the street that are going to cause the police a big concern, especially these big crowds. And, you know, if they do come back and Liverpool wins this title, I don't know how you're going to stop the people from rushing the streets of Liverpool. So that'll be a big concern for England and for the Premier League getting back. But really, it's been bad so far on their part, just a total lack of communication. I think the Championship, the second tier in England, has actually handled the situation better than the Premier League has. I think they actually have a better chance of coming back before the mid-June target date that the Premier League set. The Championship might be back before that. But you know what? That was promising news today that they're looking to start games back up in mid-June, despite what some of these players have said. It looks like the majority of the club owners want to get it going, and I think the Bundesliga coming back and being such a huge success was a big part of that. You know, we talked earlier in the pod about the ratings that they drew, and kind of the whole world's eyes were on it. I think the Premier League saw that, and you know, they just kind of figured there's got to be a way that we can make this work. So hopefully they do. You also have Serie A. They've set June 13th as their comeback date. You know, that's pending government approval. So I don't think that anybody would have predicted that Italy would be back before any other, you know, before England or Spain. But it looks like they've been able to make a turnaround there, and they could have, you know, they could have live football with no fans. No fans, of course. But, you know, I think the Bundesliga had a big thing to do with it because they all saw the success. And, you know, I think once you get past the fear and the public perception of, you know, the public perception part is tough because the tests are limited in certain countries. Certainly America's seeing that issue with the per capita tests being much lower than other countries. So baseball and basketball, when they try to get these tests to restart their leagues, they're going to have a big public perception issue in America. People are going to say, well, why do the athletes who are asymptomatic and very healthy individuals get the test before the regular folk do? I don't know if you have that same problems over in Europe. I think that their testing has been much more apt for their per capita situation. So it's just a matter of, you know, getting these owners together and figuring out how do we do it safely and effectively. I think it's promising that the Premier League is at least setting a target date. That's something that they haven't done so far. Serie A doing the same thing. You know, it's going to take government approval, obviously. But the way things are going, I think it's trending in the right direction. Now the players hopefully can see that maybe, you know, I think that you have to have certain assurances for the players regarding safety, because obviously if they don't want to play, then, you know, like Danny Rose too, like if he doesn't want to play and the Premier League comes back and he says, I don't want to play, I don't think anyone is going to kidnap him and put him in a bus and make him go play. I don't know if he should be expecting those wages if he doesn't want to go play, but, you know, that'll be an issue between the owners and the players. I think it is promising, though, overall, as far as I think we're going to be getting back to football here over the course of the next month and a half. I really think probably all the leagues except France should come back at some point. Maybe Spain will be a little bit more delayed, but it'll be interesting to see. Certainly don't think that the league should just listen to Danny Rose or Sergio Aguero, though. I like the direction
of Simeone's quote. He said he wants to return with zero risk. And although that would be ideal for everybody, there's no way to actually get it down to zero risk with a disease like this. So, I mean, coming from the rates that they were at in Italy, it was really hard to imagine that those guys would be setting a date for what we hear is June 13th so far. You think they would be a little bit behind some of the other leagues. Like, of course, Bundesliga handled it really well. So I think we all expected them to maybe be the first league back in play, and that has taken place. So for Italy to be setting that date, I definitely get how that's worrisome. Going over to the Danny Rose quote, he's not really in a position where too much changes if they don't come back to play. So I can certainly understand that from coming from him, and you can certainly respect that opinion that you do want players and the fans to be healthy along with that. So you can't really fault him for that opinion, but it's a little misguided coming from somebody that's going to be stuck in that position, whether they return to play or not. So kind of like Mike said, you got to think about those guys sitting in that maybe that 14, 15, 16 spot that do want to get back to play, that do want to get out of that relegation zone. So those guys are probably eager to get back. So I don't know if we can completely take what Danny Rose is saying at face value, because he's speaking from a position where not much changes. That's kind of my thoughts on it for the few quotes that we've heard from some of the guys that want to limit the amount of risk in it. And Liverpool going on to win the Champions, because they got this thing tied up pretty much. You do also want to be responsible with it, because I don't think there's a way that they keep their fans out of the streets if they do hold up that trophy. So that's another part of it too, that you got to be able to regulate. So I'm sure that's something that they are game planning for, which is why I think they're moving a little bit slower in the process than maybe some of the other leagues. Like you have Serie A with a date set already, and that may be provisional, but they at least came out and had a date. I see that we might get some small group training here for the Prem coming up. But yeah, that's something that you have to factor in, and that's a pretty big club, and that would be a pretty special moment for that club in some time, for the first time. So I think it'd be very difficult to keep those guys off the street. So of course you want to be safe in that aspect for not only the players but the supporters as well. So yeah, that's kind of my take on it. And I do think they're moving in the right direction, taking it nice and slow. So hopefully that's going to develop here, and we're going to see a little bit more news of what's to come for some of those other leagues, like Spain, and hopefully they follow suit, like Bundesliga, and limit that risk as much as possible. But as far as Gio Simeone, it's just no way to get it down to zero. That's not going to happen with this type of disease. We're going to be able to limit it as much as possible. We're going to get the numbers down, and then when you let things back open, you open back up, the numbers are going to increase a bit, and that's just what's going to happen. But obviously you want to limit that as much as possible. So I'm on the same page. I would ideally like for it to be zero risk, just not completely plausible, but I definitely understand, like, these guys, where they're speaking from is definitely respectable, and you kind of have to respect that, but you can't put too much weight into it just because of where they're at.
Yeah, it is. It's absolutely respectable, and I'm gonna let Coop jump in here too. But it's an ever flowing situation as well. Like every week, we get new numbers, and we get new rates, and we get new spread rates, and you know it's ever changing. So we can say this stuff today, and then next week when we do a pod, it could be completely different. That's just kind of the flows of this coronavirus. I mean, even if we did this, had this conversation 2 or 3 weeks ago, I think we all would have said, maybe, you know, just cancel it. You know what I mean? Like, it's too bad. You know what I mean? So it's ever flowing. So, definitely is promising right now, but it could change for sure.
Yeah, we're all definitely on the same page with this one. As you know, I certainly understand Danny Rose and Gio's opinions on this and things like that, and their fear of the virus as well, because that, you know, I think that's the main thing that you have to factor in is, you know, it's not just these guys, that are being impacted, it's their family members and things like that, that they're worried about possibly impacting. So I completely understand their sentiment, and I think it's kind of a reflection of how everybody, like, worldwide feels about it, right, as far as like reopening businesses and states and things like that. It's kind of, you know, you can kind of see the trend where, like, people who need things open in order to maintain their livelihoods, those are the people that are, you know, most, you know, that are most outspoken as far as reopening things, like, regardless of the risk and things like that. And then there's people who really don't have much to, you know, risk for, you know what I mean, where they're kind of still in a good situation during this time. You know, those are the people that are kind of like, well, you know, why should I risk it? You know what I mean? Like, what's the benefit that I'm getting from that? So, I certainly see both sides. And honestly, it comes down to more than just the leagues. It's really about, how these countries are handling it. And then the leagues can figure out the safest way possible to return to play, not only for the players, media, coaches, fans, and things like that. So we'll see how all of that pans out. I think we will see Serie A back eventually, probably before the Premier League. And who really knows what will happen with either of them. But certainly an interesting storyline to follow. The next thing we want to get into is a pretty major news story that was floating around yesterday. Reminder, we're recording this on a Monday due to some technical difficulties. So on Sunday, there were some rumors, transfer rumors that have been flying around about a deal between Juventus and Barcelona, including Miralem Pjanic. And the story that came out of Spain was that Juventus had reached an agreement with Barcelona for 27 million Pjanic and Dzeko in return for Nelson Semedo. And then Sky Sport Italia refuted that claim, stating that they Juventus only wanted Barca's Artur in return in that deal. So there seems to be a little bit of confusion. It doesn't quite look like a deal has been completely reached. What are you guys thinking about this? We'll start with Sean, since it's your favorite team that's involved here. What are you thinking about the possible transfer?
So when I first saw that deal, I'm not sure. I wasn't sure at first who the deal was for. I just saw that it included Pjanic, Dzeko, and cash. So obviously the cash kicker, I think it's something that any team is going to be looking for at the moment. So that didn't necessarily surprise me. But for a position that we're depleted at the moment, I thought it was a bit odd. And then I saw that the report was for Semedo. And although I do like Semedo, he's a young guy, he has potential, I don't necessarily think that that deal equates, when, especially when you value Pjanic maybe around like 30 or 40 euros. So it just seemed a little bit odd to me to add maybe both of those players in there and give a cash kicker. But I get it that it's some negotiations that they're probably going through. So from what I'm seeing is that Juventus are actually only interested in Artur. So that's who I thought was the deal was originally going to be for. And though I do think that is a bit much for us to give up for him, I understand that Pjanic may hold the ball a little bit longer than Sarri likes. He's obviously in a new system with Allegri gone. So I understood they wanted to maybe youthen up the midfield, get somebody that maybe gets the ball up a little bit quicker and maybe change that midfield up. But When I sat back and evaluated, I'm not sure. At first, the first person I kind of looked to was Paratici, and it just didn't make sense. And he's made some questionable inquiries earlier. Late last year, which I was a little bit skeptical about. We didn't really pull a trigger or any. Maybe deciding to possibly get rid of Dybala, which I didn't particularly like. From someone that I think will be probably one of the stars in the league coming up here within the next couple of years. I thought it was really questionable. Glad that wasn't necessarily what was true. I'm sure there is some negotiations over probably a few players in a swap deal with a kicker for some cash, but I didn't preferably like that that deal. So.
I think Eli sent it in a group message and we all looked at it and said they're giving up way too much for Semedo. What are they thinking? And then, of course, it came out that had fallen through and that wasn't the deal. But it looks like Barca really wants Pjanic. I think you're right. He doesn't really fit in the Sarri ball system as well as what UV fans were maybe hoping. But I think that, you know, as much as Barca wants Pjanic, they want Lautaro Martinez even more. And with the coronavirus, you know, they're going to lose revenue of over 100 million. So the cash is going to be tight if you want to bring in both of those guys. So, yeah, they're looking for a cash kicker to go in with the deal. I think that it makes more sense for Artur, like Sean said. But, you know, he sounds like he wants to stay in Camp Noir. So I'm not sure how it gets done. Maybe Rakitic or Vidal is the guy that goes. If Sarri's interested, I guess I could see Barca more willing to give up, especially a guy like Vidal. Or maybe it's someone to go on the back line, Todobo. I don't know. He's on loan right now, not exactly playing great, but you know, he might be able to get you back, you know, something which you might need. You might not get the same cash kicker though for something like that. I think that a deal will eventually get done. Usually Barca targets their guys and they get them. So I think eventually Pjanic will be on Barcelona, probably to start next season, I would think. And probably Lautaro Martinez will too. It's just a matter of how much cash are they willing to accept, how low cash, I should say, are they willing to accept from Juventus to make the deal work. And you know, who's the player that goes back in return. I don't think, you know, obviously, if it's not Arthur, it's going to be, I don't know who it's going to be. Maybe it depends, you know, Sean could probably speak to that more, what type of Barca players Juve would want on the squad. But I think it'll eventually get done. I'm glad for Juventus's sake that it didn't get done, the deal that was initially reported, because I don't think that made a ton of sense for them. But I think it eventually will get done. It makes sense for both sides.
Agreed. I do see Pjanic moving, you know, to Barcelona in the future. I think they need to strengthen their midfield, and Juventus has a bit of a crowded midfield, so I can certainly see it happening. Going after Semedo in general makes sense because they have a fullback issue, particularly at right back. But in that specific deal, it didn't really make any sense to me. And like you said, I'm not sure that they'll actually get Artur back in that deal. So we'll see what other options they may work out. And like you said, Barcelona will likely end up with him. And we'll see if Juventus even pursues a replacement or if they feel comfortable with what they have as far as replacing him within their squad. Next transfer rumor we got to get into is probably the most talked about one over the last 12 months. If not the most talked, probably the second most behind Neymar. But Paul Pogba, he's been linked with Real Madrid for about a year now. As Zidane has made it very clear to Real Madrid's front office that he wanted Paul Pogba. Paul Pogba was very adamant with United that he wanted to move not too long ago. And then Juventus also threw their hat in the ring as well as trying to bring Pogba back to where he was before he moved to United. So a lot of moving parts there. And now United is actually discussing a possible extension with him. As it seems his relationship with the club is mending a little bit. So since this transfer, you know, involves all three of our clubs, what do we think is the most likely scenario? He stays in United, goes to Madrid, goes to Juventus. Mike, I'll let you start.
Yeah, I think he stays in United. I think that in his heart, he probably wanted to move, but he probably still wants to move. I'm just not sure it makes sense financially for any of these clubs to go in and grab him. United set that fee at $120 million, and I don't think they're going to budge even with the financial impact from the coronavirus. So they're going to want that fee, and if they can't get it, they're going to hang on to him, and maybe they work something out long term. I think it could make sense for both sides. You know, he hasn't been bad in Solskjaer's system. I think when he's been out there, he's been pretty good. And now when you got Bruno with him, I think that could work even well. You know, his role is obviously going to change a little bit. You know, they don't need him to get forward as much. I'm sure he will anyway. That's where he loves to be. But, you know, he's got the physical tools. We talked about this before. He's got the physical tools to play a CDM type role. It's just I think it's a mindset issue of what he wants to do. But if you can get him to do it, I think he'll be fine. And he's still, you know, he's athletic enough, he's big enough that he'll be able to get forward and still be successful in that CDM role. So I think it makes sense for him to stay at United. They're a team on the up and up for sure. A lot of young talent. They brought in Bruno Fernandes, looking to bring in more guys this summer for sure. Sancho specifically would be a huge boost. And I'm not sure it makes sense financially for other teams, especially, I don't know, like Juventus. They kind of set a cap on the new salaries that they're going to bring in, so I'm not sure that they're going to be willing to dish out all that cash for him. And, you know, Eli just mentioned they kind of got a crowded midfield there. Not sure it makes a ton of sense. You know, Real, I think, is more of a legitimate option for him and for them if they're willing to pony up all that cash. I can't see it personally, not in this environment right now. But, I think he stays at least for now, maybe signs two more years, and he'll be in Old Trafford.
Yeah, no, I agree. I would say for Man United to let a player like that go just on the brink of getting back into some Champions League ball possibly would just seem a little bit odd to me. You have Bruno coming in that has pretty much been fantastic since he showed up day of. So with a talent like that, and then you would mix in a healthy Rashford, who's coming back off of a back injury, which is was unfortunate. Martial, who's been pretty clinical in front of goal thus far. Just mixing that into the bunch, I would say, is a pretty good recipe for success for that team. And like you said, I don't think Man United's budging on that evaluation that they have of someone that world class. You see how well he performs when he plays with them international guys on that French team. He's fantastic. And really, the troubles that they had is obviously the manager turnover that they had prior to Oshar getting there. But I think he's pretty comfortable with that new manager. And I think that they can get something clicking, because prior to him, a lot of the responsibility on that club success was falling on his shoulders, obviously, because he's the biggest star at that club. So now you mix in a guy with Bruno's mentality. You got some younger guys that are going to step up. You got some guys that you're trying to mold into some lethal scorers in front of goal. I think that's a pretty good recipe that they got cooking up there. So with the evaluation that Man United have and the environment, like Mike said, the environment that we have now with everyone pretty much bringing down their numbers just a little bit, I think it's much more plausible that he stays. And then second behind that, if not a destination of Real Madrid, I just don't really see it in Juventus' future to have him back in Turin. With all of those factors coming in now, usually with a big club like Real Madrid and having a good relationship with Zidane, I could see that being that second option, which is why I would put that before coming to Juventus. As much as I'd love to have him back, I think it's much more realistic that he travels to Spain.
Yeah, and I'm going to make it 3-for-3. I think it's most likely that he stays. I think it's actually pretty inevitable that he stays at this point. And the reason, there's multiple reasons. One, there's certainly not going to be a lot of teams coming out of this pandemic that are going to want to kick out the money to get him. So that's, like you guys said, that's a big factor there. But I think the most important reason is because even before this was happening, I think he was leaning towards staying. And I think it's because of how United was playing before, you know, during his injury. They were, you know, as after Bruno came in, they were looking like they were going to seal up a Champions League spot, which is really, I think that's the driving force, right, to what he wants. He wants to play in the Champions League, and he pretty much wants to be in the Champions League every year and competing for trophies. And I don't think he necessarily wants...
Well, competing for trophies and also, you know, the exposure. He wants to be a star.
Right, exactly. So, you know, and I don't think he necessarily wanted to leave United the club. I think he wanted to get away from all the criticism that he was getting, as far as, you know, that the faults that United had before, before this season. And I think with the Bruno signing and basically United coming out and saying that Ole was here to stay and that they were going to back him, I think that's and he seems to have a good relationship with Ole, mind you. I think that is really enticing him to kind of wait it out and say, all right, well, let's see what kind of talent United gets in. You know, one of their biggest targets that they're looking very likely to land in the near future is Jadon Sancho. So, you know, you bring in a Jadon Sancho to play up front with Martial, Rashford, and then, you know, Bruno, Pogba in your midfield. That's a young and upcoming team with a lot of potential, and that may not be something he wants to leave, you know, because he can still maintain superstar status in that case. So I think that's the biggest reason why I think he'll stay, is because I think United's kind of trying to sell him like, hey, you know, we know you wanted to leave, but look at the situation we're in. Without you, we're pushing for a Champions League spot after adding Bruno. You know, we're planning on pumping some money into this team and giving Ole a chance. You know, maybe take a second look at us and think about staying. And another reason why I didn't really see the move, and I never really understood why Zidane wanted Pogba so much with the current roster that Real Madrid has, is because, you know, more times than not, Real Madrid plays a 4-3-3 with Cruz, Casemiro, and Modric in their midfield. Cruz and Casemiro are both locked up long-term. They're still in their primes, kind of, or towards the end of them, in Cruz's case. But Modric is pretty much on his way out. But then you also have Fede Valverde, who had an excellent season, you know, up until the stoppage. Ceballos is out on loan, getting some good experience, and I'm not sure what they plan on doing with him as far as bringing him back. You still got Isco, who plays in the midfield as well. And then you still got Odegaard, who's playing at Real Sociedad, that they're extremely high on and trying to bring back from loan as well. So you're looking at a pretty crowded midfield already. And they were talking about bringing Modric back for another year or two, you know, as far as like contract extensions go. So where are you factoring in Pogba to that mix of that midfield for all the money that you would have to pay to get him is kind of what I'm worrying, because somebody's going to be the odd man out in that case. And I'm just trying to figure out who that would end up being. And I think that could end up being complicated. So if I was him, I don't know if I'd quite extend with United just yet. I'd wait it out, see what kind of moves are made in the offseason as far as improving the roster. And if the team looks like it's still trending in the right direction, then maybe, you know, revisit and take a look at contract extension talks then. But I'm excited about United's future, and I think he is too, you know, in some regards. And I think that's the biggest thing that's going to end up keeping him in Manchester.
A follow up on that in reference to a crowded midfield with Real, the reason I see that a little bit more likely is because they have some assets that they can trade that are of some value to United. Yeah. If you look at the crowded midfield Juventus has, you have Sami Khedira, who's one of the older guys who's not getting paid very much. You have Rabiot, who just came in. Aaron Ramsey, who came in on a free transfer, who aren't being paid very much. So it's just to bring in Paul Pogba, there has to be some type of deal that United get out of it. And I just don't think anybody's going to pay that amount of cash for what United is demanding for him, as well as they also have a crowded midfield already. So I'm just not sure that they can get a deal done, which is why I was leaning more towards, if anything was to come up, a move out of United, I'd say Real would probably be the option that he'd go with.
You could give us Dybala and see if you know. We might take that. No, I was just gonna say, yeah, I think Eli kind of hit it right on the head too, especially with Bruno coming in. I think that's huge, because before Bruno got there, you know, Pogba was playing in the middle and he was playing with Pereira and Jesse Lingard and a very, you know, advanced aged Juan Mata, and it was like, you know, and then they're not scoring any goals, and everyone's looking at Paul Pogba like, oh, what the hell, man? Like, you're supposed to be scoring, you're supposed to be carrying this team, and I think that's a tough burden to live with when you play for a high profile club. You know, United's one of the two biggest clubs in the world, right? And to have a lot of that pressure on him, you know, it's like other sports too. When you play for big franchises, there's a lot of pressure. You think of the Cowboys, the New York Knicks, you know, it's that type of situation there. Yep. And he was on there was a bad team around him.
Yeah.
You know, and well, you know, not all the guys were bad, but bad and young. And that's not a good combo when there's that much pressure and it all kind of falls on you. I think now that Bruno's there, they're going to try to make a move this offseason and get some more guys in there, hopefully in the Champions League next year. I think it bodes well for him to stay.
Agreed. So I think we should stay in Manchester with the next transfer that we want to talk about here, which is Leroy Sané. About a year ago, almost a year ago, it looked like a deal was in place for him to go to Bayern before he was injured in the Community Shield, tore his ACL, and hasn't quite returned since. I believe, according to recent reports, he's on his way back to getting to full health. So Bayern and Man City have reopened talks. And, you know, with their negotiation, they haven't quite reached an agreement, but they're getting a lot closer. Man City has set his price at $54 million, and according to Kicker, Bayern's only about 20% short of that number. So I think this transfer is pretty inevitable. in my opinion. The question is, will they have to come up to that 54 million? Will City drop a little bit? What do you guys think? Do they end up coming up to that number?
Yeah, I don't know if they go all the way up. I think they're more likely to throw in a kicker. You know, I don't know who the kicker is right now. Kingsley Coman seems to be a popular name thrown around, but maybe it's someone on the back line. You know, obviously, when you look at City's year this year, I think they had much higher aspirations if it weren't for all the injuries on the back line. Obviously, Fernandinho playing center back for more than half the year is not what they envisioned. So maybe it's someone on the back line. Maybe they do get up to the number and they just sign somebody. But I think Coman makes some sense to kind of fill in that spot. He'll probably be a guy off the bench for City. But I think that it's inevitable, right? I mean, he's German. He wants to be in Germany. And I don't think that he would go to any club that's not Bayern Munich. You know, his level has earned him that. So, yeah, I think he ends up there. The question is, what do they get back? And if there's a player swap or not.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we heard links for Leroy Sané and Bayern prior to the injury. And I think he was evaluated at maybe around like 125, 130, I believe. So, I mean, yeah, I pretty much had it dead set. I kind of had a feeling that Bayern was going to get their hands on him. And the silver lining in it for Bayern is that his price actually dropped, not only with the environment now, is after the injury, so price came down a significant amount. And then, I mean, with Leroy coming in, it obviously poses a challenge for Kingsley Coman, who is a man on the rise, so he's in demand. So I think they get Leroy at a pretty good price, especially for what he was originally going to be coming in for prior to the injury. So, yeah, I would say it'd be pretty interesting to see what they do out on that left mid, left wing spot with him coming in and Kingsley Coman possibly going out. So, yeah, I think it happens.
Yeah, and I think it'd be really good for him, especially for his international career. He was famously snubbed from the German roster in the last World Cup, which did not turn out well for Germany in the end. But with him returning back to Germany, I think, and playing for Bayern, you know, kind of puts him right on center stage for, you know, the German squad selection and things like that, as they'll see him day in and day out. And I think he'll end up being a starter, assuming, you know, Kingsley Coman is leaving. You know, he'll be a regular starter, so he'll get, you know, more starts than he was with Man City. He'll be in front in his home country. He'll be in, you know, more likely to get selected for international play. I think it's an all-around good deal for him. I think Bayern's also getting him at a steal, assuming he returns back to the level of play that he was at before, which I don't doubt will happen. It's not like it's an Achilles injury or anything like that. So, you know, you get a player of his caliber at only 54 million. I think that's an absolute steal for Bayern. Yeah. So the next transfer we want to get into, and the last one we'll do, is Lautaro Martinez. Inter have practically accepted that he's on his way out, and Barcelona looks like the prime suitor for him. And it's looking like a hand-in-glove fit. He's Argentinian, so he's had experience playing with Messi. He's young, so and coming right up into his prime, as they're looking for a replacement for Luis Suarez. So, you know, this is looking like it's going to be a done deal sometime this summer. What do you guys think about Lautaro to Barcelona?
I'd say that'd be a pretty interesting move, especially for Martinez. I think for him to elevate his level of play, I think he should possibly move to a bigger club like Barcelona. You can pretty much see how well that'll work out with him already having rapport with Messi, kind of having a pretty good hold-up game and kind of a similar way to Luis Suarez. So I could definitely see how it work out pretty well for Barcelona on that end. And then Inter probably get a lot of cash back for that to maybe go out and get another guy to help out who they just brought in, Christian Eriksen in that midfield. You got Lukaku playing really well up front. So I think it'll be interesting for both sides, and definitely for Martinez, get him some a different scene. And he's a guy on the rise, one of the younger guys in these leagues that probably are going to be one of the best, I would say, because he's pretty potent up front. As much as I would not like to get an Inter man a compliment, I would say he's pretty good up front. So I think that's something that could work out really well for both Barcelona and Inter. It'd be interesting how that would play out now with the environment, whether that would include like a kicker or a swap deal, or what Barcelona would ask for in return, or if they'd just be paying the money up front for him, because it seems to look like that's their number one target coming up in the next transfer window. So I would say it'd be pretty interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, I think he probably goes to Barca. It seems like that's what everybody is expecting, is him to go to Barca. Now, I will say some of the people at Inter who have said that they want him to stay at Inter, but, you know, I think that they're going to be disappointed. I don't think there's any way he actually does stay at Inter. You know, he's got Barca is after him. Real's, you know, they've even been brought up and there's thoughts that they could match a bid for him as well. United's in the mix, of course, like with every player. I think Barca makes the most sense. Like you mentioned, Argentina, and it could fit well with Messi, kind of a replacement for Suarez. So, yeah, I think he ends up at Barca. I wouldn't mind if he came on to United, though.
Yeah, I honestly would prefer him to go to United as well. I certainly wouldn't want to see him in Barcelona, but it's looking that way. And it, like I said earlier, it's a pretty hand-in-glove fit, you know, as far as what they're looking for is in a replacement for Suarez. I think Martinez is probably, of all the strikers on the market, is probably the best bet there. He was linked to Real Madrid. Real Madrid have actually been in the market for a few different strikers. They've talked about Haaland. There's Aubameyang, apparently, was on their radar as well. Because apparently they've given up after three quarters of a season on Luka Jovic, which I think is a little bit unfair, as he didn't really get enough opportunities to showcase himself.
Yeah.
But,
well, he could be moved in a swap deal.
Yeah, and I think that's what's going to happen. And I think that's going to be a mistake on Real Madrid's part, because I think that kid has a lot of potential. And really, I don't know what they're planning to do on replacing him, because all the guys other than Haaland that they're talking about are, you know, older than him, like Aubameyang's in his 30s. I don't really see the point in bringing him in when you just extended Karim Benzema and he's playing as well as he is. So that doesn't really make sense to me as far as Aubameyang. Martinez, I think, is, you know, Real Madrid will do this a lot when Barcelona has a big target. They'll throw their name in the hat as well to almost keep Barcelona from getting a top-tier player.
Or drive the number up.
Yeah, right. So, or to drive the price up, right. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. But I think it's almost destined that he'll end up being in Barcelona probably in the summer.
I agree.
All right. Well, that's all the topics we had for you guys today. We appreciate everybody tuning in to our fifth episode. Sean, any last thoughts?
Yeah, I do. Real quick, before we go, thank you, fellas, for having me on again. I appreciate it. I do want to give a shout out to the first responders. Thank you so much for everything that you do. We appreciate it. Everybody, take care of yourself. Love yourself. And y'all be cool.
Okay, yeah. Thanks, Sean, for that inspirational message. We appreciate you coming on, for sure, as always. Soccer is definitely one of your areas of expertise, so happy to have you. Thanks for listening, guys. Sorry about the slight delay in today's episode, but, you know, stuff happens when you're dealing with technology, so no big deal. So we're going to have it out today, and we appreciate you listening. We appreciate the likes and the shares and the retweets. It all goes a long way. And stay posted. We're going to have some more news with the All In podcast coming soon.
Absolutely. We've got some very exciting things that we're working on as well with the podcast. So Sean, thank you for coming on. We appreciate your presence every time you come on the show. We appreciate everyone who's tuned in again, especially we even recently found out we have a small fan base in Ireland. So shout out to the Ireland fan base. Thank you guys for tuning in. And, you know, again, thank you guys for all your support. It, you know, like Mike said, a retweet, a like, you know, a post goes a long way. So if you like the podcast, make sure you subscribe on whatever platform you listen, leave a rating, and share your podcast with friends and family that you think may be interested as well. So thank you guys again for tuning in. This is the All In Podcast, and have a great night.